Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on today's episode of The Real. It is September 9th. We are here doing a much shorter episode. We missed last week. Not a lot big has happened in terms of movie news. So today is going to be, you know, a lot in the terms of discussion and, you know, debate. And it's also Adam Sandler's birthday. So, you know, without further ado, let's get real here. Going to be our permanent intro music from now on. Sound good, Chris?
Sure.
Okay. My name is David Auth, here as usual with
Chris Miskey.
And unfortunately, Jared DeLauder just is not here today. Don't know where he is. He could be sleeping, could be doing homework, but
busy watching movies.
Yeah, thanks, Jared. Yeah, probably. We are joined in the studio today by two people who probably should have been on the show a lot earlier. Ladies, why don't you introduce yourself?
I am Clay Manley.
And we have sitting next to Clay Manley.
Go by a lot of names. Most people call me Big Dill. Officially, Dylan Graffius. I also answer to Turd Ferguson and Dillius Maximus, but, you know, we'll get to those later.
All right. Thank you, Big Dill. So how are you boys doing?
I'm well.
Yeah, I'm also well. I'm happy to be there.
Make that three wells.
All right. So let's Chris, I didn't ask you.
I redact my statement.
Okay, good.
You know, you can put it back. I'm happy you spoke up.
Let's jump into it today. So, first thing I wanted to discuss is it is Adam Sandler's birthday, and I thought to celebrate the great Adam Sandler, we could talk about his worst movies. Anyone want to, you know?
Most, if not all.
What do you mean?
Not an Adam Sandler guy.
You're not okay. No, I mean, neither am I, but. What in your mind is the worst Adam Sandler movie? We can talk about best too, like The Waterboy. I enjoy The Waterboy.
The Waterboy is like diamond in the rough.
The Waterboy and Happy Gilmore, and what's the other one?
Billy Madison.
See,
and
I
then what?
I really cannot stand Happy Gilmore.
Why is that?
It makes me irrationally mad when I watch it.
Oh,
why?
There are many small things.
Like what?
I wish I came with examples, but...
it's an excellent film.
Excellent.
Oh, excellent comedy.
It's excellent compared to the rest of Adam Sandler's movies.
It only has a 61 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Well,
yeah,
there you go.
Well, Rotten Tomatoes is a bunch of liberal garbage, so let's get that out of the way.
Okay.
We're not going to take any political stances on this show.
No,
so,
we're not a political show. What about Just Go With It? What are our thoughts on Just Go With It? Have you guys seen Just Go With It?
Yes, that's the one with Jennifer Aniston.
Yes.
And then the one, like, Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition, Flame Out.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember her name.
I don't know. My theory is that Adam Sandler is solely in the business of making movies so that he can just, like, make out with hot actresses.
Yeah, we were just talking about this last night.
Because it is pretty much every single movie. Well, we were watching Mr. Beats last night, right?
Mr. Deeds.
Mr. Deeds.
Yeah.
Deeds,
yeah.
Yes.
And
Mr. Beats.
Mr. Beans.
Mr. Beats.
And Winona Ryder is the female lead.
Mm-hmm.
And Winona Ryder.
Fantastic. We are a pro Winona Ryder podcast.
Yep. Pro Winona Ryder podcast.
We sign off on that.
And in that movie, she was definitely an attractive actress, and Adam Sandler probably just made that movie, you know, so he could kiss Winona
yeah.
Ryder.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not gonna knock him for it. You know, he's made his money, and I do respect him for being that guy that, like, brings in all of his friends that are also horrible actors and not really funny,
like Rob Schneider,
Kevin James,
David Spade.
David Spade.
Well, grown ups like those movies. The only funny person in those movies is Chris Rock. And that is literally, that's it. There is not a single other funny actor or actress in those movies.
Yeah. Have you guys seen Hotel Transylvania?
I've not.
Can't tell you how.
They've made three of those, right?
Any other guesses?
The animated.
Movies.
They've made four.
They're making four.
Yeah.
The fourth one comes out in 2021.
I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Honestly, the first one was like, it was fine. But did it warrant making a second, third, and fourth Hotel Transylvania starring Adam Sandler?
Probably not.
I don't think so. No.
Is there going to be like two trilogies like Star Wars, and we're going to talk about like the original trilogy?
They're going to make prequels.
The Hotel Transylvania verse. I don't know. He was in Pixels. Please tell me.
No, Pixels is the worst movie of all time. I will die on this hill.
Wow.
I don't know. Jack and Jill was an abomination.
Jack and Jill, Bedtime Stories is another.
Actually, Bedtime Stories was fine.
How dare you?
I didn't hate it.
I was not bad on the Russell Brand train in like the late 2000s, early 2010s. Like I think everything he puts out is just terrible.
Do you guys want to take a guess at what Pixels has on Rotten Tomatoes?
Can't be more than 15%.
Audience or critic?
Critic.
Is it lower than Chris's?
Just take a guess.
27.
Clay, you're low.
You literally can see
it. The critic score is 16. Chris, ooh, you are one away.
Oh, come on. Wow. How?
What about the audience score? Because audience scores are always...
Audience like, has to be at least like 65.
Dylan?
37.
Close. 46. I have never seen an audience score
that low. That is really, really low.
Yeah.
You should check out The Last Jedi. There's a very, very large disparity between the critics and the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes.
You'll get that with Star Wars.
So Adam Sandler signed a big deal with Netflix to make, I think he signed on for 4 original movies with them.
Yeah.
Is that completed? Has he made all 4 already?
He did the one about the shoe guy, the cobbler. That's right. The one. He did Murder Mystery. Mm-hmm. It just came out. I don't know about any other ones.
I think it's just the 2 that have come out so far.
Wow. We still have 2 more Adam Sandler films left.
What do you think about Anger Management?
I liked Anger Management. Not
because of Adam Sandler.
No, Jack Nicholson played a huge part of it.
Because of Jack Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson is the reason that Anger Management is salvaged.
It works. It works because of him.
The Longest Yard?
I like The Longest Yard.
Not bad.
A lot of big time cameos in that. I mean, Nelly's in it, The Great Khali's in it, Terry Crews, Chris Rock. Well, Chris Rock's obviously a main character. Michael Irvin, Stone Cold Steve Austin. A lot of big time cameos, and it was cool having Burt Reynolds in there because he was obviously in the original Longest Yard. I think it's a pretty funny movie.
What do we think about him on SNL, going off of just his movie appearances now?
I think he's definitely way better in SNL, but I have not seen like a sketch where I've been like, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen. Like, yeah, I have never reacted that highly.
Well, I think it's just a general reaction to SNL skits. I feel like a lot of SNL skits, regardless of decade, are hit or miss. And, you know, a couple are good, but then you find that one that just, you laugh every time.
So do you have an Adam Sandler sketch that you think is like the one?
An Adam Sandler sketch? I do not.
No?
I do not. I was speaking more in general terms.
In general, I agree with you, but I think Chris is right. Like, there's no...
The pinnacle of Adam Sandler's SNL career is the Hanukkah song, and that is
not that
funny. It's never been that funny.
And very political, too.
I've never found it that funny. He just... His voice is so annoying that it just hurts my ears.
Yeah, I think if he didn't do that voice, you know, like the Adam Sandler voice, it'd
probably
be...
If he just wasn't himself, then he'd be great.
If Adam Sandler wasn't Adam Sandler, he might be better. Any other lasting thoughts on Adam Sandler?
What do we think about Don't Mess with a Zohan?
Ooh.
What is the consensus on that?
Clay, you want to take this one? Have you seen Zohan?
I have not.
I think I saw Zohan where I was like at that age in my life where I wanted to watch just like R-rated comedies. And I thought it was the funniest thing. I think I've only seen it once, but if I were to go back now, I don't know.
Its rewatch value doesn't hold up compared to like whenever I watched it as a child.
It's at the point now. When I first saw it, I was kind of like you, David. I was very enticed with the whole unrated part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's gotten to the point now where it's late night on Comedy Central. And when I mean late night, like not like 11:30 or like 12, like, no, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, they're showing it. I will say that caught some heat almost as a poor man's Borat with the I don't know, cultural appropriation of Middle Eastern men with Adam Sandler and Rob Schneider's characters.
Yeah. That's actually kind of like when I watched Sohan, I thought it was Borat.
Yeah.
That's well, like when it started off.
They kind of took that concept a little bit. Now, obviously not the web series or making a movie, tracking all the progress, but more of like an actual movie with that. It's interesting. If it's on TV, I'll watch Meet the Zohan.
Will you?
I will.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will. Anything else about Sandler, Clay?
I would say, so David Ferroni has a theory that certain things will be funny, but only for a minute and a half. And I feel like that really applies to Adam Sandler, where it's not even that funny to begin with, but after a minute and a half, I'm just really sick of it. So I have not seen a lot of Adam Sandler movies, but I've gone about a way just to avoid watching them for that reason. I'm really not a fan.
Okay, I'm fine with that. Lastly, what about 50 First Dates? Is that a movie I haven't seen. That you'll watch? Would you be interested in watching it? Because it's not the typical Adam Sandler-esque humor, in my opinion.
No, it's not. It kind of goes back to your theory that Adam Sandler is just in movies just to kiss attractive actresses.
Yeah.
Drew Barrymore.
Yep.
Attractive, especially young Drew Barrymore. It's an interesting concept, though. It really is the whole amnesia premise of it.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's very atypical of Sandler. It almost has some dramatic aspects of it while still trying to be a comedy.
Yeah, I think one movie that... Hold on, let me...
Chris just has this face right now. He's just...
I can't believe we talked about Adam Sandler for this long.
He's just holding in all of his unadulterated rage right now.
Was Drew Barrymore the female lead in 50 First Dates?
Yes.
Okay, this is another movie we didn't bring up. Blended?
Yeah.
Have you seen this?
I have not seen it.
It is... Probably the worst Adam Sandler movie, in my opinion.
Really?
It's probably between that and
whenever
Pixels
exists.
So it came out in 2014, and it also has Drew Barrymore, and it had Bella Thorne, and it's like the most cringy movie, like the most stereotypical Adam Sandler-esque humor, and I absolutely hated it. Oh. It has Terry Crews in it, which is like kind of redeeming, but like.
So he has to have like one other actor or actress in like his movies to even like get close to salvaging.
Yeah. All right. We done bashing Adam Sandler.
I'll tell you this. The Adam Sandler, despite 3/4 of this room being very against Adam Sandler's movies, I think his early stuff was pretty funny. I'll be honest.
His earlier stuff was better.
Yeah, I think there's
that's
a
the key.
I think there's a certain year.
Better than the worst.
I think there's a certain year, like where Adam Sandler just went from young and lovable and dumb, and he just kind of got old, and his antics of being a child, you know, looking at a guy who, you know, is graying or doesn't look, shouldn't be acting like Billy Madison anymore. You know, it's tough. It's tough to see, and I think with him, what happens to a lot of comedians is that they kind of lose. I don't want, because Adam Sandler's never really struggled, but a lot of times comedians, when they get into the realm of comedy, like they have this struggle. They have so many stories of just how terrible it was or just all the crazy things that happened to them. And eventually they just run out of things to talk about or original ideas. So I think the longevity has not, or Adam Sandler has not had longevity.
Yeah.
And according to Chris, he never really, you know, had anything to start with, but that's cool.
Exactly.
Yeah. The Reels Adam Sandler hate train is chugging at full speed.
We are a very anti-Adam Sandler podcast.
Pro Winona Ryder, pro Linda Cardellini.
Yep.
Anti-Adam Sandler.
Yep.
And anti-politics.
You hate to see it.
And about also, we're sponsored by Slim Jim. People keep on forgetting that.
Yeah.
Are we actually?
No, we're not. Yeah, we are.
Is that why we have this giant bowl of Slim Jims here?
Yes. We want Slim Jim to sponsor us.
And bubbly.
It Chapter 2 is pretty much the only movie in theaters that I could see us, like, It's like the only movie worth seeing in theaters right now. Are any of you guys going to see it? Chris, I know your answer because you're a little baby.
I have a deathly fear of clowns.
I might. I saw Chapter One when it came out. It was interesting because I was at the Robinson Cinemark. I was right in the front row. So it was all coming at me very fast. I thought the first chapter was good. I thought they paid homage to the source material,
mm-hmm.
and this, like, especially like even in little ways, like at the end of It Chapter One. Spoiler alert! I'm sorry if you haven't seen it. It's almost 2 years now.
Yeah.
Like where they do the Blood Brother Pact. Like that's actually in the book. Like they actually cut their hands. Mm-hmm. And take that oath. Like I thought it was pretty interesting. But with It Chapter Two, I've heard it has not been as favorable to critics or audience members as the first one was.
The one thing that I've heard is that Bill Hader like absolutely crushed it in this film.
Bill Hader. We are very pro Bill Hader.
Yes.
Podcast as well.
Hader. I barely know her.
Perfect.
Have you guys watched his Barry HBO TV show? Mm-hmm. Or is it Netflix?
No, it's... I thought it was HBO.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it's HBO.
What do you think?
He's good in it.
Yeah.
I think it's all right.
Yeah.
He's great.
I don't think I've ever seen a strictly comedic actor transfer over to doing like dramatic roles. Mm-hmm. So I think if I do see It Chapter 2... He's probably like the main reason. Like, I want to see just how good he is in it.
Wait, you haven't seen other comedic actors do dramatic roles?
I mean, I have, but in terms of like actors that strict, like he only ever did like big comedy roles.
I mean, Will Ferrell has been in a bunch of comedies, and he was in Everything Must Go.
Valid point. The other one is Steve Carell.
Yeah,
The
Big Short.
Yeah, that one and Fox.
Yeah.
What was it called? Fox something?
Yes.
Where he plays like a wrestling coach.
Yep. I know.
Oh,
exactly.
Foxcatcher.
Yeah, Foxcatcher.
That's what it is.
With Channing Tatum. So
go wrestling.
It is, you know. But I was a big fan of Bill Hader when he was on SNL, so I'd like to see his prowess in a drama role.
Oh, for sure. I think Bill Hader has a lot of acting chops.
Yeah.
Like even in his earlier years in small roles, I mean, he would always kill it.
Yeah.
SNL, as he started getting more and more deeper into the cast, what is his character Stefan? I mean, that was that where he covers his face with his hands and literally cannot stop cracking up. That's SNL skit gets me every time.
Yeah,
great actor.
Yes, phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
Any other Bill Hader thoughts? No.
No.
Okay. Next, I want to talk about The Joker, which we kind of talked about last episode, but I'm kind of worried now because the hype is like I keep seeing things about it, and then I'm like, all right, like the hype can't possibly get any bigger.
But then I see
like something the next week, and like it gets even bigger. Like, I don't know what film festival it played at, but after it ended, it apparently got an 8-minute standing ovation. Do you know how good something has to be for people to...
8 minutes.
For people to stand, to give a standing ovation in general, but 8 minutes.
And to keep clapping at that. I mean, that's,
your hands start that's, hurting after so, like
oh,
two
yeah.
minutes.
So my hot take coming in with this is that Joaquin Phoenix is going to have a better Joker role than Heath Ledger, but nobody's going to want to talk about it because...
Joaquin Phoenix is alive. Oops, I said it.
Yep. I mean, yeah.
I'm sorry, that's just what it is.
The thing that I'm worried about in term, like, aside from the hype, is like the internet edgelords that think they're like super hard, that wear trench coats, like they're gonna start like posting quotes from the movie and like thinking they are the Joker.
Start putting up makeup,
and it's gonna ruin, I think, the movie for me at some point. Just
because,
seeing
like,
them.
The Joker has always been this guy who's like manipulated by science, and now he's, you know, thrown into Arkham Asylum. He's gone crazy, Batman's enemy, whatever. And now it's just a guy who's been thrown into society.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's going to be a lot more edgelords who are going to be like, wait, that could be me.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
I failed at everything I've done. I could be the Joker, guys.
Am I the Joker? Oh, my God.
Pretty much. And I'm very, very scared about that. happening because I love Joaquin Phoenix. I love Batman and all the villains in it. So I love the Joker. So I just don't want to see. I don't want to have to like cringe every time I see something Joker related. Yeah. You know, and we almost got to that point with Jared Leto.
Yeah,
it was very
this close. You can't see my fingers, but they're touching.
Yeah, it was not fun. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm very on board with, regardless of who makes it, Marvel or DC, I'm very on board with R-rated superhero films.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan. Well, obviously this would be a supervillain film, but I was a huge fan of the Deadpool films, mm-hmm. Logan. I think R-rated superhero films, because since movies like The Dark Knight, Iron Man have come out, everyone wants to make superhero movies that feel real. They're not so real anymore, but they have this dark broodiness to them. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's achievable, but these movies kind of get caught up in the PG or PG-13 realm. And I think if you let it go to R, then that's when it gets real.
Yeah, well, Joker isn't even rated R.
I thought
the report that I saw, and I mean it is rated R, but yeah. Like, the report that I saw was that it was rated hard R.
Which that's right. I
don't
I did
know
see that.
Why hard R was how they classified it. If it's hard, like if that's a classification past R, but that was very questionable, and I don't really understand.
I mean, past R is NC-17.
Yeah,
and I don't even.
Why not just label it?
I don't
that?
Even think that's like. I think the last movie to do that was like Showgirls,
smut.
Yeah, I mean just pure smut.
Well, I agree with Big Dill. I think like superheroes, classically, like even in comic book form, have been reflective of society, like where we are right now, and kind of the tone. Like people are looking for that deeper, like dark tone that they can connect with, because I think that's where a lot of people see us as a society are right now.
Especially like the Batman franchise. There's like so many dark themes in that, just overall as like a franchise. And I think that like if there's going to be any singular superhero franchise that should like take that route of being more dark, more serious, whatever, it should absolutely be any Batman movie that comes out, because that's the one that it's made for. That's its niche role.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and I agree with that too. I as much as I like that superhero movies that get real, I think they kind of get it twisted sometimes. So for example, like a lot of people were very upset with Zack Snyder's Man of Steel because of Superman twisting
General Zod.
Yeah, General Zod's neck at the end and killing him. And it's like, oh, it's a moral dilemma. But like, I mean, Superman is usually depicted as a pretty bubbly, you know, Boy Scout kind of superhero. So I think that's where there needs to be a separation. You know, characters that are supposed to be bubbly, are supposed to be uplifting, you know, a shimmer of light in this dark world, you know, maybe need to stay that way. I think they get, like, for example, like the Fantastic Four. I think the remake of the Fantastic Four, was that 2015 that was made?
Yeah, roughly.
Which just was an abomination, mm-hmm. Not to be confused with The Abomination. It was actually the Thing in the Fantastic Four. But again, they tried to make it too real. The suit of Dr. Evil, or not Dr. Evil, I'm sorry, Dr. Doom, mixing up my franchises here, was terrible. And it's just they try to make things too real, and that's where they get caught up. They kind of have to strike that balance between surreal and real.
Going back to Batman, I actually wasn't going to bring this up today. I just didn't think we'd get too into any superhero stuff. Apparently Mahershala Ali is being eyed to play Gordon in the new Batman movie, Commissioner Gordon. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I think he definitely is serious enough. Like he can definitely be like that, like kind of like police chief mm-hmm. kind of guy. The only concern I think I really have is, it's not really a concern. It's just playing devil's advocate more or less. But I just don't want like them to like give like him an expanded role because he's Mahershala Ali and he's so incredible at everything he does. I just don't want him to be take up a bunch of screen time wherever it's a Batman movie. You know what I mean? If it's like, I don't even know. Like, I mean, they had Gary Oldman play Commissioner Gordon in The Dark Knight.
Great job.
Fantastic. And I love Gary Oldman. He's a big actor, but they kept him on the screen for just as long as he needed to be there. Mm-hmm. It wasn't way too much, wasn't way too little. So mm-hmm. that's my two cents.
Yeah, it's another one that, like, I'm sure he will crush it, but whenever I hear, like, reports like this, where they take a, like, originally white character, and they're like, hey, we're going to cast this African-American actor. I'm like, all right, here we go again. Like, people are going to be mad online that they're casting someone as a race that wasn't originally the race of the character. So I haven't seen it just yet, but I'm sure, like, if he actually gets cast, that'll be...
I think it's
all over, you know, cringe Twitter, and just it's not
usually
fun.
Usually see. More of a problem when it's a white person being cast
as
in another role.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I mean, when
we had the same exact argument with the James Bond,
Idris Elba. Yeah,
yeah, that's
well, you would do a great job, by the way.
The James Bond actress now is African American.
Yeah,
and I have not. I feel like in reality though, it's always like if it's a comic book character, the race switching is always taken like significantly worse when it, like, you know,
there's a lot more material with comic book franchises than Ian Fleming's James Bond novels. So I think people, like, they read all these comics, they visualize this person as being a very specific way, being portrayed in a very specific manner, and then it gets thrown off base. So that kind of throws people off. It's like how they're now, all the Aquaman comics that are being released now are Jason Momoa Aquaman, not like the like the old one. So
that bright orange, like whatever suit that blonde he's wearing, with the blonde hair, or like super pale white face. Yeah, they switched him in the comics. And they've done that with a decent amount of, like the movie character will look a certain way that's different, and then they'll switch the comic character to match. So yeah, I definitely think Mahershala Ali would crush it if he does eventually get cast. Just be prepared to see some horrible takes.
Cringe
online.
Twitter.
Well, yeah. We recently had Into the Spider-Verse, Miles Morales, kind of the character existed in the comic books, but in terms of like the general public
was not aware that there was an African-American Spider-Man.
Right, yeah. And I think like Spider-Man has always been the character where, of all superheroes, like you can't see any of his skin. Like, most superheroes have some amount of skin showing.
Yeah.
So, like, really, it's easy to sympathize and, like, or empathize with him. Like, anyone can see themselves as Spider-Man. So, it worked well for that role, but I really don't think anyone had a problem with that.
Yeah.
I think if it's done well, people will respect it.
I would like to see Miles Morales brought into the MCU. I think that would be a very good look for them.
Yeah, well, Spider-Man's, in general, is just kind of done in the MCU.
Yeah, I know.
So
it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Well, I know I'm splitting hairs here, but Sony's rights to Spider-Man, is that Peter Parker's storyline?
I think it's all Spider-Man.
Okay.
Yes.
Anything Spider-Man.
All Spider-Mans and several of the villains as well.
Okay.
Which is why they can do Venom, Carnage, and what's the other one? I don't know.
Oh, I used to know. Son of a gun.
Great radio right here.
I know.
We'll
nothing
move
better
on.
Than some dead air.
We'll move on now to some Black Mirror talk. Have you guys all seen season 5 Black Mirror?
Yes.
Yes? What's your favorite of the 3 episodes? What is your favorite?
Mine is definitely the second one. The kidnapping.
The kidnapping?
Yeah, I can't think of the name, but...
I don't remember the name either, but I agree.
Yeah, I thought the first one, what's it called?
Striking Vipers.
Striking Vipers was definitely like the most classic, like Black Mirror-esque episode. Like, it wasn't set super far in the future. Like, there wasn't a lot of like out there technologies, but the moral dilemma in question was one that was like very, very Black Mirror-y. And, you know, it's one that like kind of makes you uncomfortable just because of like they're having sex in a video game.
So my biggest, like, the thing that irked me the most with that episode is the guy says he's addicted to having sex within the Striking Vipers game, and that he's tried all these things like sex with a polar bear, all kinds of stuff, and nothing can really scratch that itch. If they have this advanced VR tech that can make you feel created feelings mm-hmm. within the game code, there would definitely be games specifically for sex.
Like maybe they just aren't at that point yet. Maybe Striking Viper is like the first technology to be able to use that, like the headset thing where you like link into the game.
I'm not buying it. Like, if there was game code in Striking Vipers that could make you feel sexual pleasure,
like that's like so.
I think there would be something specific.
You
got
to think like in terms just backtracking as far as technology goes. The Wii, like how like you can like immerse yourself by like having this remote, and right. it's like you're yes. you're activating whatever kind of device you want to in a game, and that was like a really big deal whenever it came out. You can play tennis without going outside and playing tennis, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then Xbox Kinect came out. You can do all kinds of stuff there. Now that we have like the whole like VR, like the Oculus stuff and whatnot, where you can just kind of immerse yourself that way. There has to be a beginning part to that. So maybe, like,
Striking Vipers is the
maybe,
beginning.
But that's such a weird avenue to take for the first game in that kind of technology. You would right. think they would do like a
even right now. Yeah. There are like porn applications for VR that you can get. Right. So
you know anything about that?
If games are being developed, you know, like you're right, it wouldn't be the first thing. Also, to if they're making code. Like simulates pain, I get that. I just feel like the developers of that game would have had to go out of their way to make it do what it did.
I mean, you gotta think like within at least the video game. Do you think it would like feel? I guess you would feel pleasure from using like, one of like the super special moves where you like shoot fire out of your hands.
Okay, here's
so therefore you'd be able to see like feel the same
sensation
from. You know, doing it with one of the other characters.
The developers who make the game, right? They have to create 3D models of the characters.
Yes.
They went out of their way to 3D model genitalia underneath the clothing.
Okay.
Like, there was some extra steps involved in making intercourse possible within this game. And I think that someone else would have done it specifically in a separate application. They would have done it better. So the whole premise for me was not great. I was kind of bothered by that. Couldn't get behind it as much.
What did you guys think of the ending to Striking Vipers?
It was intentionally uncomfortable. Like,
yeah,
they got that across well.
Yeah, it's definitely like one of the most typical sort of Black Mirror episodes, but it wasn't typical, and it made me like bored. Like, every episode is obviously different, but this one like definitely pushed the boundaries of like me being uncomfortable watching it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. What'd you guys think about the characters in it? Or like the actors, how do you think they did?
I thought the acting was good.
Yeah. What was the main guy in Striking Vipers that plays Falcon in what's it called?
I can't think
the
of his
MCU.
I cannot think of his name.
I think they both crushed it in it.
Yeah, like they definitely were. They were very good at what they were doing. It was like one of those episodes that was really hard to watch. So it was that the only thing that was keeping me really in was the acting.
Yeah, Anthony Mackie, that's the main guy.
Yeah.
What about Smithereens? So Smithereens is the second episode that you mentioned, the kidnapping.
Right. So that I felt that there's more suspense in that episode than most episodes in the series. Like, yeah. I was on the edge of my seat. It takes place pretty much exactly modern day.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a year in the future. Like,
yeah.
And I was pretty captivated. Just, you didn't know what was going to happen next, and you want to know. It kept you watching.
Yeah,
that's like, I think something, Black Mirror has always been that, like, futuristic Twilight Zone, where they have something like advanced technology, which is creating an issue in some regard. But this one was like, it was so real because it was something that could just happen now. And that was like something that Black Mirror hasn't really done a lot. It's mostly been like stuff like in the future, like you said. So I think that was like why it like drew me in a little bit more.
So one of the biggest criticisms I've seen of this season is that there weren't any major statements about technology. Like, it didn't bring up a moral dilemma.
But Smithereens definitely placed a statement on today's society, mm-hmm. did it not?
Right, but it's
It just took aim at social media.
Yeah.
So, like, Black Mirror in the past has been, like, bringing up these, like, ethical quandaries about, you know, is what we're doing going to lead to something that's wrong? And I think, like, Striking Vipers, a little bit, like, it's a little quirkier. Smithereens was, like, probably the realest of the three episodes in the season.
So you're saying that a majority of Black Mirror episodes take something that could eventually happen and say, is this wrong or is this going to be wrong? But Smithereens is all about, like, is what we're doing today wrong?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the show's creators, their goal is to make you question stuff and the road we're heading down. And I really don't think that Striking Vipers did that for me.
Okay.
I don't think that, was it Rachel, Jack, and Ashley too did that? And Smithereens was kind of, it was interesting, but I don't think it made me question or like ponder after the episode ended too much. I was just like, that was good television, moving on.
Yeah, I think, well, with Rachel, Jack, and Ashley too, this was actually my favorite of the season. I think the whole season as a whole, it's just three episodes, was very, probably the most diverse in terms of episodes season so far of Black Mirror. Like, in terms of like plot structure, level of like futuristic technology, and just overall like structure of the episode. Like, it was all very different to me.
So have you guys talked about Bandersnatch on here?
Not yet. Not in depth. We've mentioned it.
So I would lump that in with season five. It's closest to that release. Yeah. And like, just to make it nice. I really wasn't a fan of Bandersnatch.
Why is that?
So again, like, I think Black Mirror, like, people, I'll speak for myself. I like it because what I was saying, like, it can make a statement, and having the different endings literally meaning different things, like leading to different ways.
Mm-hmm.
As a fan, I wanted to see all the endings, and they're not consistent. Like, there's not a general theme. Like, they go off different ways. So it's interesting exploring the technology of like interactive storytelling.
Yeah.
But as a cohesive story, it was kind of frustrating because it didn't say anything. I feel like I kind of wasted some time like watching all the different stories.
Well, I don't think every Black Mirror episode is trying to make a statement. I mean, some definitely are, but I think some, like literally the first episode, is just trying to like push the boundaries and make the viewers uncomfortable in a way. And I think Bandersnatch kind of did that because of how meta it was. So like, if Bandersnatch was not itself a choose your own adventure, if it was just about a person making a choose your own adventure video game, and you don't get to like choose what he's doing as the story progresses, then it wouldn't have been nearly as interesting. I think for Bandersnatch to be good, it had to have been like, it draws you, like it puts you into the actual storyline, and like,
right,
it, like, you watch him go through it, like you watch him go through, you know, being a part of that, but then you are also like part of, like, you're literally part of the storyline.
Yeah, I agree with it to an extent. Like, there's one ending where he ends up jumping off the balcony and dies, and like, that's the end of that storyline. That's fine because it doesn't conflict with anything. But there's the one where like, it, the camera pulls back and it's literally the set of a show, which again is meta, but doesn't really align with like some of the other endings. Like, it makes you think like, well, which one is it? Like, it can't really be both. That's where I'm like, well, I want to know the story. Like, I'm a fan of the series. I want to know what the story is.
How many hours of you, like, how many endings did you get to?
I think I watched all of them.
Okay. Because apparently there was like 5 hours total of like avenues that you could go down on Bandersnatch.
Right.
I only did like 2 or 3, but it was kind of like a video game. Like, I kept feeling like I was not, like, I was like forgetting which way I should be going, like which way's already been. So
yeah. And the other thing is, it kind of ruined the rewatch potential for me, because
yeah, I definitely know, don't think it's one that you could rewatch.
No, and I think I like the show for what it is. Like, I feel like I could pass it off to someone and say like, this is good. Like, my experience with this has been good. I would rewatch it again. Bandersnatch, yeah, I'm not crazy about.
So what about Rachel Jack? I asked you too. My first question with this is, did Miley Cyrus, like, she killed it, right? Come on.
She might have been
the perfect pick.
She might have been the best actor, actress in this season, I think. Her like role was absolutely perfect for it.
Yeah. I just like it wasn't a very typical, this one wasn't a typical Black Mirror episode. Like, the stakes weren't super high, really. I mean, they were for like a small amount of people involved in the storyline.
Right.
But like, the world wasn't like a drastically different place in this. Like, the technology wasn't like super different. So it was just kind of like a fun one to watch. Like, it was definitely like, it didn't make me uncomfortable at any point. Kind of had a message to it.
The idea of like people harvesting your brain for like content to market to other people is a little uncomfy.
That's, you think that's uncomfortable?
A little bit, okay. But it's like, I don't think that it was trying to like raise a question of if it's ethical.
It's definitely, it's a controversial issue, but rather than taking a full cannonball into it, they just kind of dip their toe in the water.
Yeah.
And that's it. It wasn't as much as they usually do as far as that goes for like Black Mirror episodes. Like, they usually take that cannonball and just kind of let you decide what you think is right. And then this one was just kind of like testing that out, seeing how people were going to react to it. But
right.
Well, so, I think the ethical question in this, or the ethical like statement they're trying to make, was about like childhood stars and people who get their lives like basically run for them by, you know, their like adult like parents or like whoever is their manager, whoever's in charge of them. And that's kind of why I think Miley Cyrus was like the perfect choice for this role, because
she's lived that life.
She herself has gone through that. Like, if you like, there's all these conspiracy theories about Britney Spears, about how her father is like blackmailing her and like making her do everything she's doing now. So like he can profit off of it. And that's literally like pretty much what happens in this episode of Black Mirror. So I think it was kind of a statement on that side of Hollywood and I guess the music industry mostly. So that was definitely like the ethical, like moral dilemma that I understood from this episode.
I think the only thing that really, so it's the last episode of the season and like probably my two favorite Black Mirror episodes are both at the end of seasons, Black Museum, end of season 4, and The White Christmas, end of season 2. Both have like several stories throughout and they kind of tie together. And it's kind of a going thing with Black Mirror that there's a twist at the end. Rachel Jack and Ashley 2, very straightforward. There was no attempt at a twist, which is fine. Like, it was enjoyable, but I think it left a little bit of desire to see more, especially being the end of the season, like the last thing you watch. It's just a happy feel-good thing where, it all worked out.
Okay. What are your guys' favorite overall episodes of Black Mirror, not from just this season?
Somebody else go first.
My favorite is either San Junipero or Playtest. Playtest is, like, by far the most, like, twisty-turny episode, like, pretty much like a lot of Black Mirror episodes, like you think you know what's happening,
right?
And then you get they throw you for a loop, and then you're like, all right, this is what's happening. And then again, at the very end, you're like, oh, I did not expect
this. It's very much like Inception, like you don't, well, especially that episode, like you don't know what's base reality,
In Playtest, like it didn't, it's kind of like Striking Vipers, where like it's set in current day, but there's like one futuristic aspect to it, so it feels a little bit more, I mean, obviously it's not realistic now, but like it doesn't feel like way too advanced in the future, and it's like you said, like you don't really know what like the base reality is. And my favorite thing from that episode is, I don't know if you guys, when you guys watch movies and TV shows, do you go through on IMDb and like read the trivia or like the fun facts about it?
No, I typically only do that whenever it's a movie that I have seen so many times that I feel like I need to like know more about. That's typically when I go about it.
Yeah, I won't go out of my way to see IMDb. If it's on Amazon Prime, it has a little card in the top if you pause it. I like that. I like reading the facts when I pause stuff, but I don't try too hard to read all the 25 things you should know about this movie.
Yeah, that's definitely so. Like, I don't know why I started doing this, but like, I have to do it now. And Black Mirror is definitely, if you're gonna look at like the trivia or like the did you know facts, right. Black Mirror is the one that you like have to do it for, because there's so many things that you don't pick up on.
But that's what makes it enjoyable to see again and again. Like, you can go back, and you noticing it makes it that much more rewarding.
Yeah. Well, so this is one that I noticed like on my own.
Go for
it. But then I had to go and like actually check to make sure that it was not just me, you know, being crazy. So in Cooper's mom's house, like the stair layout, her room is at the end of the hall upstairs, and that's the exact same stair layout of the access point layout in the game. And this is why he was resistant to entering it, fearing that it would have something to do with his mom, who is, does she have cancer, or is she like going crazy?
I think she has Alzheimer's.
Yeah. So
she's
Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
So like, what's happening in the game?
Sorry. Pathological corrector.
Yes.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Is based on his own like personal fears. So you think that his fears are dictating, like what is happening within his playtest.
Right. And I think that's the concept of the game, is that it feeds off of your fears.
Yeah.
It knows it, even if you aren't conscious of it. Like, he was very much avoiding that. And it was like, what's the worst could happen? I see a spider.
Mm-hmm.
And it just gets worse.
Yeah. And San Junipero is definitely one of my other favorite episodes. It's the only one so it doesn't take place in the past, but it, like in a virtual reality way, does take place in the past. And that was kind of, I guess for me at least, refreshing to see out of a Black Mirror episode.
Right. So it seems like it takes place in the past for a good majority of the episode.
Yeah.
And then you realize, like, it shows you no.
Yeah, like what's actually going on there.
Yeah. Yet again, like, it tricks you into thinking you're in base reality,
mm-hmm.
rips you out of it, and says no, that was virtual.
Yeah. All right, Chris.
All right, so if I had to go two, they're both from season two. And the Waldo moment is one that I really enjoy, with like the politician that they kind of like brainwash into mm-hmm. and going about things. Because that one is like, it's like V for Vendetta-esque, which is, it's like vibes that I've gotten. And that's one of my favorite movies. So that was one that I very much so enjoyed. And then White Bear was another one I liked a lot as well. Those were probably my two favorites.
And White Bear is one of those, like, that mark is so signature Black Mirror. Like, mm-hmm. that's probably mm-hmm. one of the most common Easter eggs that you'll see throughout the series is that mark.
Yeah, mm-hmm. like the little Tetris piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Tetris, Tet being four, it would not actually be a Tetris piece.
Okay.
So. Oh,
You're so dumb.
My bad.
I'm sorry. Every Tetris piece has to have four blocks, and there's very little. Really? That's what the Tet means.
Huh. Learn something new
every day. I thought they were paying homage to the Vietnamese New Year, like the Tet Offensive. But, you know, you learn something new every day. There you have it.
Thank you, Big Dylan.
So Tetris is actually from created in Russia.
Alexei
Pajitnov would not have been. I don't think that was his thought process.
I mean, it might have been. Do you know him?
I have not met him.
Well, there you go.
Right. There you have
it. We want to cut it there with the Black Mirror stuff.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I think Black Mirror is definitely one of those things that you could talk about for hours and hours, because there's just so many, like, even with a single episode, there's so many things you could discuss.
You could go episode by episode and do a show about each one.
Yeah.
And like, still have things
I grew up watching The Twilight Zone, mm-hmm. like the old Twilight Zone series. Not like the Rod Sterling Twilight Zone. And those are like, that's fantastic television to me. Like, I could watch a Twilight Zone episode every single day of the week and like be totally fine with it. And like Black Mirror, like being able to like have that, like living in the moment, I can now unpack it as I'm watching it on TV, is a really cool experience that I like. So
right, the non-serialized makes it so like they have so much they can work with.
Mm-hmm.
One of my biggest problems with Stranger Things is that the Duffer Brothers originally intended a non-serialized thing where they do season one. Season two is going to be with a different set of characters, and I feel like they're really locked into what they're doing now,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not a huge fan of it. So I kind of wish I could have seen what they would have done if they could change it up, but you got to make money.
All right, so have Who else has seen the Netflix show Mindhunters? Clay, you haven't seen it?
I have not seen
Chris,
it.
Have you finished it yet?
No, but it's a story that has been told. Okay. Like, I mean, it's literally about the FBI classification of serial killers.
How far into this do we want to jump, or should we wait until next week to, like, till you guys finish it completely?
It's up to Large Dylan.
Okay.
I've not finished it. Oh boy.
All right, we'll do next week.
Yeah, we'll wait on that. It's honestly, it's not. I don't think it's on the level of Black Mirror, but
oh, no.
you could spend a lot of time on Mindhunters.
Yeah. So we'll definitely do that next week. We're almost out of time here, so I think we should also do Once Upon a Time in Hollywood next week as well, and like really dive into that one. Sorry, Big Dylan.
You're killing me. About it.
And then lastly, this is a new segment. I'm calling it Missed the Boat, where we talk about movies that we watched way too late after they came out that we really liked. I'm ashamed. We talked about this like last fall, pretty much. Movies that we were ashamed that we hadn't seen yet. And Inglourious Basterds, I watched last month for the first time ever.
Great film.
I am 100% ashamed that I waited that long to see it. Brad Pitt's character in Inglourious Basterds, I would rank him in my top 10 movie characters of all time.
Could you rank the movie overall within the Tarantino filmography?
In the Tarantino verse?
Yes.
I'd definitely go top three.
It's number one for myself. Yeah.
Just like Brad Pitt's accent alone is what makes that movie for me. And the villain as well. That villain is absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, Christoph Waltz, in his first American role,
mm-hmm.
wins an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah.
In his second American role in Django Unchained,
yeah.
wins an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. I mean, the dude is just unstoppable.
So he's ethnically Austrian, obviously, and that is the one and only time that he has ever accepted the role as a Nazi. And he says he won't do it ever again. He says he gets approached like at least like 100 times a year for like an upcoming movie about like a Nazi or something to play a Nazi.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And he said the only person he would do it for was Tarantino.
And Inglourious Basterds is crazy because Quentin Tarantino had written it about 2000, 2001. Mm-hmm. He had a script and he just could not find anyone to play Hans Landa. And he had kind of toyed with the idea of Leonardo DiCaprio, but there are literally interviews where Quentin Tarantino says Christoph Waltz gave him his movie back.
Yeah.
He was able to make it because of his performance.
Any final thoughts before we finish up here?
About movies that we wish we had seen?
Yeah, if you guys want to share.
Oh,
your
The Pianist. By far, The Pianist. That's now my favorite movie of all time. And that's one of those movies where it came out in 2002. So like it's a recent movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd watched Schindler's List before I'd watched it. I'm a history major, so I watch a lot of historical stuff just in general. That one, I have never been hit so hard by a movie than The Pianist. Adrian Brody is brilliant. And that's after that movie, his acting career, like it didn't go south fast, but he said he has not been the same since The Pianist, like having to play that role. I hate Roman Polanski, by the way. We're very anti-Roman Polanski yes. podcast here. Not as far as his movies go, as far as him as a human being goes.
Yep.
Anti him. Love Adrian Brody. Love that movie.
Anyone else, movies that you've seen recently that you really liked but that came out forever ago?
I'm going to stick with the Tarantino film, or the not the same Tarantino film, but the Tarantino theme that you brought up, David. I'm going to go with Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
I just watched that actually with Clay
yep.
and a couple other guys this summer.
My first time watching it as well.
And I had been meaning to watch it for a while because I love Tarantino films. I mean, mm-hmm. I've seen Pulp Fiction and Glorious Bastards, Django Unchained a million times.
Mm-hmm.
But this was one, especially because, you know, it's his first film. Well, I shouldn't say his first film, but the one that most people recognize as his first film.
Yeah.
And I mean, just incredible. What's crazy about it is that there's literally like, for a majority of the film, there's like three sets. It happens, and for a majority of the film, one set. Like yeah. it happens all in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And very bottlenecked.
Exactly.
And that's like, I like that Tarantino style too. It's the same thing in Hateful Eight.
Yes.
It's literally a single room. I love that dynamic because there's so much that can happen just in one room.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel confined.
Exactly.
Like there will be TV shows that will do like a bottle episode and you'll feel kind of trapped. Like I wish they could go out and do more exciting stuff.
Well, the reason they do, I think they're called bottle episodes, is because they're trying to save money on the show's budget so that later on in whatever the season, they can blow the budget and like do some crazy like CGI like stunt fighting
stuff. Go
like
that. Top.
But and you there can, are there are good episodes of bottle episodes. Like,
but you can feel that they're cutting costs. It,
yeah.
You don't like Tarantino has the ability to do more, and he ends up doing more with less, which just makes it that much better.
What I like about Reservoir Dogs is like normally the storyline follows like all the action in a movie like that, but it's solely a movie about like the fallout of, you know, what happened when they robbed the bank. It's very like very very Tarantino-esque. So
very,
yeah.
And with Reservoir Dogs too, and actually I mean a lot of Tarantino films and a lot of other films, like Steve Buscemi does an excellent job in Reservoir Dogs, and mm-hmm. I think Steve Buscemi has turned into this butt of a joke.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of grouped in where we talked about earlier with Adam Sandler bringing his less funny fans along. But, I mean, when you see Steve Buscemi in, like, dramatic roles or very, very dramatic films, he does an excellent job.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very pleased to see that. I don't have the greatest love for Steve Buscemi, but a film like that, his role in a movie like Big Fish, which also has Ewan McGregor, who is one of my favorite actors of all time, it's great. I was very, very pleased that I had seen Reservoir Dogs. Kind of check that one off the list.
I think that Steve Buscemi thing kind of goes back to what you were saying earlier, where, like, David was saying there's not a lot of actors who are comedy who can go dramatic. I think that if you can do comedy, you probably have the range to be able to do whatever you want. Like, I don't think that there's many actors who could do something serious and transition to comedy. Yeah. But I think, like, I think as a broad statement, if you can do comedy really well, you're going to be a good dramatic actor.
Interesting. All right. We good to cut it there, you guys think?
I'm all right.
All right. Thank you for listening. We will hopefully be back next week. I think you guys should probably just come on regularly now.
Oh, you think so?
I would be all right with that.
I love having you guys on. I feel like you guys are very good at asking questions that are thought-provoking.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Give good statements.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Very appreciative of the offer.
A big thank you to Slim Jim for advertising.
Oh my God, it's so good.
So yeah, thanks for getting real as always. My name is David Auth from Chris Miskey, Dylan Graffius, and Clay Manley.
Ooh,
what was that?
Clay Manley. We will see you next week. And here is the outro song. Get ready. Is it playing yet?
It is not.
It is not playing.
Messing with Sasquatch.
Thank you. Thanks very much. When I was a kid, this time of year always made me feel a little left out because in school there were so many Christmas songs, and all us Jewish kids had was the song Dreidel, Dreidel, Dreidel. And so I wrote a brand new Hanukkah song for you Jewish kids to sing, and I hope you like it. Put on your yarmulke, here comes Hanukkah. So much funukkah to celebrate Hanukkah. Hanukkah is the festival of lights. Instead of one day of presents, we have 8 crazy nights. But when you feel like the only kid in town without a Christmas tree, here's a list of people who are Jewish. Just like you and me. David Lee Roth lights the menorah. So do Kirk Douglas, James Caan, and the late Dinah Shore. Guess who eats together at the Carnegie Deli? Bowser from Shanana and Arthur Fonzarelli. Paul Newman's half Jewish and Goldie Hawn's half too. Put them together, what a fine looking Jew. You
Bells or Jingle Bell Rock, cause you can spin a dreidel with Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock, both Jewish. Put on your yarmulke.